Hello and welcome to episode 522 of Fergo on the Freak. I'm that bloke from Rugby League Project, Andrew Ferguson. You can find me on Twitter at AndrewRLP. And join me as always is the glorious League Freak, who you can also find on Twitter at League Freak. How you going there, mate?
Going well, Andrew. This is an impromptu podcast.
Yeah, I just thought, it's Saturday, why not?
Yeah.
We've been throwing them out all over the place at the moment. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been good fun. It's been like it's kind of like
Reece Walsh when he's got an overlap. Just chuck it anywhere.
Throwing them all over the place. He threw some bad passes. He must have left a good, 12 points on the table, and that's just through the tries, not the conversions. And, it was disappointing to see him do that as a neutral, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also a learning curve for him. He's only 21, and, in 5 years' time, he won't be throwing those passes. He'll be throwing better passes, but he won't be throwing them every time as cutout passes. So you got to let them learn, don't you?
Well, that's right. At what age do you reckon a rugby league player should have got the most of that learning done?
It's a good question. I was thinking about this with halfbacks, right? Mm. In terms of Lachlan Ilias, and because the news comes through today that South Sydney has signed Lewis Dodd from St. Helens, and we'll get to that eventually. But I was thinking about, how long it takes a halfback to really have a command of the game. And I was thinking about Ilias, and then I was thinking about him compared to Cleary. And look, even probably at the beginning of last year, you and me were talking about things that Cleary still has to work on, and that you can see him starting to do. And he's 26. So I think for a halfback, it takes a lot longer. And I think that that's something that not only do fans forget with halfbacks, young halfbacks, but I think a lot of coaches don't have the time to wait around for a young halfback to develop. And so that's why you see some weird decisions with halfbacks. They get cast aside very quickly. And you sort of think, wow, that's, they're developing this young guy in first grade and then he's out. But the coach hasn't got another 6 years to wait for him to develop into the player that he's going to be. They need instant results to save their jobs. So I think it's different for many different players. Props used to develop more towards the end of their 20s, where I think now that's a little bit different these days. I think that we've seen a fair few props. They're pretty good by the time they're about 24.
Yeah.
Wingers and fullbacks tend to be pretty good very early on. So I think it's different for all different positions, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I'm thinking that for second rowers who occasionally play at lock and might be born in England, it could be somewhere around 68.
Possibly. Yeah. It's always a problem when you've got an undersized, underskilled back rower who thinks they're the main character.
96 kilos.
Mm.
Wingers are bigger than that now.
Yeah, yeah.
Fullbacks are bigger than that now.
Yeah. It's like, did you ever play junior footy with somebody that just thought they're way better than they actually were, and stuff that you'd be like, what the fuck are you doing?
In my experience, though, they were usually in the halves.
Yeah, same here.
So, I have all the skills, so I'm just going to be the halfback and I'm going to do everything and I'm going to be I'm the fucking gun here.
Mm.
You bastards, know your role and do what I fucking tell you to do, yeah? You'll get the ball when I feel like giving it to you. It's that sort of attitude. But it was always in the halves.
I never really
got it from a forward. God, forwards would just be sitting there going, Fools are for us. You bloody fancy bastards in the backs would never get to do any of the stuff you do.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was the undermined grunters out there doing all the slog in the middle. Never appreciated until a back has to work in the forwards and like, oh fuck, they do a bit of hard work in there.
I never had that problem because I was a winger, like as a specialist winger. But I remember playing touch footy against Wayland High School, and they were just better than us. And I'll be honest, the school I was playing for, I think there were a few people in my team that were scared of the Wayland High School dudes. And I remember we're playing against them and we're holding on barely because they were a better team than us. And this dude in our team gets the ball. He's running across field and he tries to slip the ball. I'm not shitting you. Between his legs, like, you know, a crossover in basketball.
Yes.
But he tries to slip it between his legs, being like all fancy and shit. And of course, it just dribbles out and he knocks it on. And we all just looked at him like, what the fuck are you doing? And of course, they, you know, Waylon scored immediately. And yeah, just, I'll never forget that. And so that's what I was actually.
Well, I was going to say, in his mind, though, that was your fault for not being there to catch the ball.
Well, keep in mind, it's touch football. So the ball can't touch the ground at all. Like, it's not exactly like he could kick it or anything. And he tries to put it between his legs, like, fucking why? And we all just looked at him and were like, you fucking idiot. And yeah, we ended up getting beaten in this. That was in a semi final. And. Yeah. And anyway, I was thinking about that while I was watching Bateman play. And I was thinking, that's fucking Bateman.
As the Tigers were hanging on, they're not really hanging on for, you know, to get back into the game. They're trying to score, get themselves on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
And they're trying to stop Brisbane from putting any more points on. So I think it was 28-0 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the last 10 minutes of the match.
Mm-hmm.
Haas gets the ball. And yeah, he's a big unit. And he goes for a run to the line. He's about 8 or 9 metres out when he takes a run to the line. And Bateman is the first line of defence. And he tried the most half-assed attempt to tackle Payne Haas's elbow in a grabby motion I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And Haas just kept walking. And he probably looked back and gone, why are there so many, like, Mozzies and stuff around here? I was looking at it going, the fuck was that? You've got shoulders, John.
Mm.
Like, I'm not expecting you to stop Haas, but I'm expecting you to have a fucking crack at it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're playing lock. You must know how to tackle.
Do it's something, so frustrating man. To watch.
Like, I was just watching it going, this is the sort of old West Tiger signing that I've got sick of for so long. Mm. He seems to be one of the last ones left doing it. Even Clemmer. He's miles, comfortably miles better. He is still ripping in.
Mm-hmm.
He's still trying to make, you know, big meters, and he's holding his own. He's holding his place in the side. He hasn't done anything to justify him being dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but I don't see what Bateman does for this team. Like, several times he was a second receiver. Why?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like he thinks he's the main character. It's like, get the fuck out of the ball,
and he doesn't at least try and engage the line and run to it. He gets the ball and just stands for a second and then goes, someone else's turn, and just passes it on. And then by then the defense is on him, and then the ball goes to the ground, and it's a turnover or something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after he had the missed tackle on Haas and Haas scored, he then goes for a run close to the sideline and gets tackled and dragged into touch by one player.
Mm. A second rower running near the sideline.
Yes. And then shortly after that moment, a ball is loose on the ground. And instead of just falling on it and getting a full set of six inside the Broncos half, he tries to kick it ahead and has an air swing, and Brisbane get the ball back. Now, can you just once, John, do something right? That'd be nice. All years they signed him for.
I was actually thinking about, I wonder, because Benji Marshall will know exactly the exact amount of the salary cap that he is just carrying in this team right now. And it must be very frustrating. I honestly think, and I think we've seen a little bit of the West Tigers now to see if Benji has made a difference, and he has made a big difference with them. The results aren't there because the talent isn't there. But the way they are playing, he has changed it dramatically. And, you know, that's always the sign of, are you a good coach or not? Like, there are coaches that come in sometimes and you can't really see any difference as to what they're doing compared to what the previous guy was doing. He's taken over a worse team than the previous guy had in Tim Sheens, and he's doing more with it. They're not going to win many games, but he's putting things in place. I mean, just their attack looks a lot more structured, which is good to see. They look more dangerous in attack, which is good to see. Defensively, they still have breakdowns, and some of their defensive issues come off the back of, like, a lot of mistakes and things they make, and yeah. It puts them under a lot more pressure than they should be. But even defensively, they look a lot better than they were last year and the year before, to be honest. And he's doing that with less talent on the field. And so I'm really, really hopeful for his ability to coach this West Tigers team going forward if he gets enough talent there to get the job done.
Oh, so, and this is the best the Tigers have looked defensively in a long time. The application's there. The technique is better. The defensive positioning is better. They had a winger make his debut tonight on the wing. I think he came from rugby union. And
yeah, I think he's a 28-year-old rugby union player, which screams Tim Sheens.
Exactly. I believe he didn't get to play in any of the trials. And I think he's only played maybe one league game prior to this.
Jeez. It looked like it too. Defensively, he wasn't very good.
Defensively, he was atrocious. His ball running, very, very strong.
Strong ball runner, yeah.
His turn and chase is horribly slow.
Yeah.
Which is not great for a winger.
No.
But, yeah, he very, very strong ball carrier. Maybe he could be better in the second row. I could think of a place he could play. John, maybe you should go to the wing, buddy.
Well, I mean, they've signed Taruva for next year, and he's a good signing.
That's another news story. That's a great signing.
Yeah, yeah. Taruva is a very handy player. Penrith dropped him from this game that they've just played against the Cowboys that finished about, I don't know, half hour ago.
Is that a punishment for signing with the Tigers?
Well, look, apparently Ivan Cleary said that he would clear up why he was dropped in the press conference. And
is this more salty, Ivan?
I don't know. My guess is that Ivan Cleary he's just got to get to a point, because they played Alamotti instead, and Alamotti played pretty well. He still does things that he shouldn't be doing in a Panthers side, like he'll still drop a ball here and there and stuff. But his ball running is really hard, which is good, and. You know, if he can just get the mistakes out of his game, he's got a chance to cement a place in this great team.
Yeah, he's a very good young player.
My guess is that Ivan, in this press conference, is going to say something along the lines of, look, we have lost all of these players over the last 3 or 4 years, and we have always played them through. And Taruva wasn't in his best form this year so far. Like, he was all right, but he wasn't at his best. And at some point, for the best of the club, they've got to look forward at what they've got going forward, you know? And that's my guess as to what he's going to say. Could be something completely different. But, you know, we'll find out. By the time you hear this, you will know more than
one. Well, that's right. Maybe Taruva was just tired.
Possibly. It happens.
It does happen.
Can we talk about something from, by the way, the Cowboys versus Panthers game, really weird game, almost a typical Cowboys game in the sense that they scored a lot of points and lost.
And kind of in a hurry too, like they've been playing a lot of games of two halves of late where they are atrocious in the first half and then they look like a completely different outfit after Todd Payton has a very calm, quiet, menacingly threatening, you know, conversation with them at halftime.
Mm-hmm. And Penrith got out to a big lead. The Cowboys come roaring back and Penrith managed to sort of hold on. It was a really gutsy win, I thought, by Penrith. But these six again calls that are afflicting the game right now are a real problem. And it's not just that game. We've been talking about it for a long time now. I thought in the Tigers game it was also an issue. Mm-hmm. It's been an issue all year with everyone. any time an attacking team gets within 20 metres of the opposition line, they basically get 18 tackles because referees just call absolutely everything. Like I'm watching teams busting their ass defensively across the league, and referees are pinging them for things that I don't know what it even is most of the time. And it's like six again. It's like they've already made 14 straight tackles on their line, and all of a sudden it's another six again call. And when a team doesn't score off of that, there's a problem with that team. Like, you should score. But it's happening in every single game where, you know, the game of rugby league started off with unlimited tackles, then it went to four tackles, and then it went six tackles, and it's been six tackles for decades because that's the ideal number. And then all of a sudden we're at a point where it's like you get within the 20-meter line of your opponent and you're just going to get unlimited tackles almost again. It is insane, and it needs to stop.
Yeah, look, this is always going to be the issue when they decided to go with the semi-abolishment of giving away penalties. And it was, again, it was a knee-jerk reaction to the media having us talk about all the penalties in games.
Yeah.
So this was their solution. It's not a solution. Because sometimes you get a set restart, but if it comes late in the set or they wave, you know, six again, and it's on the last, and you got to put a kick up, and you're like, oh, fuck, if we had known, we'd have hung on to the ball. I think the set restart hasn't been the success that I think the NRL probably thought it might have been. I'd be fine if they just said, look, this hasn't worked out. We're just going to go back to calling penalties. And make a little rule. If you are giving away penalties and the referee deems that it's intentional and you're on your own line, if you do that twice in a row, we're just going to send someone to the bin.
Yeah.
And let the referee choose.
Yeah, because
let's put the fear of God into it and say, right, don't go around fucking around, right? If you're going to keep doing this and you're the Dragons, right, what we're going to do is we're going to say, even though he's nowhere near the play, if you do this, I'm just going to send Ben Hunt to the bin for 10 minutes. Are you going to keep doing it? Of course you're not.
No, no. The thing is that it's so easy for a referee to just go, oh, six again, you know, and I think it would be much less likely if they had to blow a penalty. We wouldn't be seeing all of these things being penalties. We just wouldn't. And it's just like if you're having to tackle 18 times on your own line with no break whatsoever, you're stuffed. You're absolutely stuffed. And I just think that it's bad for the game. Like, I'm watching it, and you can see so many teams busting their ass on their line, making like tackle after tackle, and you know, they get off of a player slowly, and not even ridiculously slowly, just a bit slowly because they're stuffed, and the referee's like six again, and it's like, what chance does this team have? You know, it's not like they're getting six again calls for blatant what should be 100% penalties. It's just like silly stuff. It's frustrating to watch because, you know, at some point there's like, I know people like seeing points scored, and I know that the team that is currently the three-time premiers is the best defensive team we've ever seen. But you can't just negate defense again and again and again. Like, it can't all be just for the attack the entire time. You've got to be rewarded for defending your line, you know, for a number of tackles in a row at least. And we're just not doing that at the moment.
Maybe we've got to make the in goals bigger. Keep the field the same size.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of, like, maybe the in goal can come up to the 20-meter line. And if you just get within 5 meters of it, we'll just give you 4 points. You just have a shot at goal from wherever you want. Bang, 6 points.
Why not?
Maybe that's what the media and what Vlandis wants.
It's terrible to see. Like, You know, and it's happening to every single team in the league. Like, it just, we need to dial back the number of six again calls. Because, I don't have a problem with this six again calls from, you know, your own 40-meter line to the opposition 20. That, the balance seems to be about all right, you know?
But once you get inside, when you're on your own line.
Yeah, once you're on your own line, it's, teams get hammered with it, and it's not good. I think it needs to be dialed back.
But, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I think they should be – they should never got rid of the penalties.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they still treat penalties like they're a lot – like they're a harsher version of the set restart. They're still seen as, okay, you've forced my hand here. I have to call a penalty.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Just bring the penalty system back as to how it was for close to 100 years. Actually, it was just over 100 years. That was fine. That wasn't where the problems were. It's worth remembering. I don't know, we've mentioned it many times before. This whole mess with set restarts came about because of a few games when the referees started cracking down on the ruck, because it did need to clear up.
Yeah.
And they were clearing it up just by being aggressive with penalties.
Yep.
It wasn't going to take them long. It was probably going to take them 10 weeks and they would have sorted it out, but the penalty counts were going to be high. The games were going to be a bit shit until everyone started to realise, let's not do that anymore. But the media jumped on board. Oh, the game's shit now. I fucking hate this. You should only call the obvious ones. Blah, blah, blah. And they went, okay, we've got to find some halfway measure. And they fucked around backwards and forwards. And it wasn't until during COVID they decided to go with this stupid set restart thing.
And you, I mean, you and me were like, that's one of the worst seasons we'd ever seen. Oh, that what was it, 2021, was it?
Late 2020 and all of 2021. Just
yeah,
the games weren't close. They weren't. There was no contest.
No,
there was like four or five teams that were like just belting everyone every week. It was ridiculous.
And that seven tackle set thing that they give when you kick the ball dead, like they brought it in to stop fullbacks like Greg Inglis and Billy Slater from being taken out of the game. Who, you know, while they were dominating every single game they played. And there's just no use for it. Like, it's this modern-day relic. It's really weird.
Here's what I hate about it, okay, is you get a once-in-a-lifetime talent come along, like Billy Slater, and teams have to think of very unique ways tactically to try and eliminate his impact on a game so you've got a chance of winning. You can't remove him entirely. He's too good. He'll find a way to get himself involved in the game. But you had to find a way to try and get rid of him. That's something that's good that rugby league was doing. You had an absolutely brilliant talent, and clubs happened to think intelligently, how can we deal with this? That's tactics. That's a very good thing. And they're thinking of things that are completely legal. There's nothing dirty or nasty going on. They're just going, we'll just kick it dead, take him out of the game. Fine, you do that. But at the same time, you're not exactly giving yourself that much of an advantage because you're not actually trying to give yourself an opportunity to score points or get the ball back or anything like that. You're actively handing them the ball.
So yeah, it's 23 meters you're giving up.
Yeah. So, but to actively create a rule to try and stop someone who is a phenomenal player in their position, to try and stop them from being as phenomenal, who does that? So if you're watching Formula One, you're going, no, Max Verstappen's too fast, so we're going to take 300 horsepower out of his car.
Why? Like the rule was to encourage teams to not kick it dead, so that a player like a Billy Slater or a Greg Inglis were going to be able to be involved more in the game. And it's like, well, before this rule was in place, these guys were not only involved in the game, they were dominating everything. Like, no one ever come up with a tactic to stop Billy Slater. No one ever come up with a tactic to stop Greg Inglis. And giving away a free tackle, it's just that all it did was give another tackle to the opposition teams. Like, it didn't change anything with tactics or anything. Teams still kick the ball dead now.
And again, it was all through the media whinging about it.
Yeah.
Oh, the players are just kicking the ball dead all the time. Oh, we'll change the rule. How's about, I'm going to have a little chat here with the NRL. NRL, stop listening to the mainstream media. They don't watch the game, so how can they know what's good for it? Yeah? Mm-hmm. So how's about you go back and think of all the things where you listen to the mainstream media about stuff that they said that they don't like or the things that you need to do and everything that you reacted to and changed to make them happy, go back and reverse a lot of them. And if the media wins, you know you've made the right decision.
Yeah.
One by one, do them all until the media's completely got the shits. And then every single one of them has got the shits, take their media accreditation away from them.
Yeah, if only they'd do that, hey?
That would be the greatest thing ever.
It's weird that they don't remove media accreditations from and people say, like, that's censorship. They can still write about the game. There's no problems with that, but you don't put down the red carpet for a dickhead, do you?
It's not censorship. God, they can still write about it as much as they want.
Yeah.
These people aren't going to games to do their opinion writing. They watch it on TV.
Yeah.
Why would they just get the accreditation because they want it? Well, it's a perk I've got. I can go and do this. If it's a game that's like, so they can go in there and have beer or whatever like that is, you know. It's a perk for them. They don't go to watch the game. They don't know what the hell they're watching. You can take them to an NBA game and they tell them it's rugby league. And, oh, yeah, I remember watching this bloke play. And if they're going, just have another fucking beer. Don't whinge about the UFC or some shit.
Yeah, exactly.
There he is.
But, yeah, this six-again rule, it needs dialed back because it's becoming silly now.
I'd just get rid of it, seriously.
I'd be fine if it was got rid of completely. As I said, I don't have a problem with it in a certain section of the field, but once you get inside the 20, it has been way overused. And, you know, teams that do have a good defensive stand are getting fucking smashed, and their good defensive stands amounting to nothing because they're having to tackle 18 times in a row. It's not good. It's not good for the game, I don't think.
You know what else I'd modify?
Mm-hmm.
Something, I mean, I'd rather just abolish it, but if we're going to keep it, the ref challenge, you're not allowed to use a ref challenge in the last 10 minutes.
Oh, really? See, I...
Because everyone is, I would say nearly every team, every team is actually using them. If they haven't used them up,
mm-hmm.
they will use one getting into the later stages of a match, not because they're challenging a decision, but to just get a breather.
Yeah.
And that's not what it's for. So I'd say, right, you're not allowed to use them in the last 10 minutes of the game. You've got 70 minutes to use it, right? And if you've got yourself into a position where a decision could go for you or against you in that first 70 minutes and you choose not to use it then, you're an idiot.
What if we start bringing in, what if we do like the Formula One engine change rule where every month, you get 2 ref challenges.
Ah, I'm liking this. You get an application.
Yeah, I knew you would. Because that way you don't get a chance to just burn it, or just to get a breather. And it resets every month. Like you can't bank them, but you got 2 every month. That'd add a really interesting wrinkle to the competition, hey?
That's a better use of it.
Like, if you're going to use your challenge, you better be certain, because that if you'd use your 2 challenges really early on, like even give you 2, and you can use 2 in a game if you want, but you're stuffed for the rest of the month if you do.
Yeah.
Be an interesting one, wouldn't it?
Would you also make it so that even if you get it right, it doesn't replenish? So it is just 2 and that's it. Whether it's right or not.
Look, you could do that. I'd have no problems if you did that.
Anything to reduce the number of times that gets used, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Purely because I know it'll piss off the mainstream journos the most. Giving the referees a bit more authority, I'm fine with that. And then, you know, maybe we can get back to having 2 refs on the field at some stage. God knows we need it.
Yeah, I agree.
So bring back penalties. massive overhaul of the refs challenge, I'd say we pick one of the two, right? When it comes to the ball being kicked dead or you catch it on the full in your own in goal, either it's play on and you get 7 tackles, or you get 6 tackles and you start on the 20-meter line. You don't get both, though. It's one or the other. I'm not saying the team gets to choose. I'm saying the law needs to change to one or the other.
Look, if you got – if they did the 7 tackle set when it was you caught the ball in your own in-goal area.
Yeah.
For me, that would be like, okay, the opposition team kicked the ball and it went too deep, right? And you were in position defensively to get the ball and spike play dead immediately by catching it in your in goal. That would make way more sense to me that you get an extra tackle than if they just kick it dead. Like, it's just, there's a couple of bad rules. They need to change them. They really do. Yeah. Can we talk about Lewis Dodd?
Hang on. I think with Lewis Dodd, we need to make sure that he's not just known as Lewis Dodd. You know how, like, Lewis Hamilton is Sir Lewis Hamilton?
I didn't, but anyway.
You didn't? Oh, he got knighted a few years ago.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, you know. Well, any time a British athlete actually wins something, they knight them.
Apart from Stirling Moss, what did he ever win?
Who's he?
He was an old Formula One driver that used to... he was like David Coulthard decades earlier.
No, I know.
He was in the best cars, but he never won shit.
I was making a joke along the fact that he wasn't knighted, so he couldn't have been a famous British athlete.
Oh, there you go.
Because, you know, like Tim Henman never got knighted.
You know, it's never a good sign when you get knighted in England, and that's all I'll say about that. Normally means you've got some skeletons in your closet. That's all I'll say about that.
But yes, I don't think he should be known just as Lewis Dodd. I think he should be known as Superstar Lewis Dodd.
Well, there were some. I saw some websites referred to him as a superstar. I thought it was ridiculous.
Well, I mean, the only website I go to for my rugby league news mentioned him as a superstar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that one that you wrote all of the teams for?
I might have been a bit busy. Content is king, people. Content is king. There might have been about a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At some point, I had to stop going through your, with permission, by the way, before anyone gets upset. You know, people are like, they're fucking dickheads. But, yeah, I had to stop at some point because I was like, I just can't keep doing this.
Meanwhile, I keep doing this.
Yeah, the next thing is like, oh, there's a team of Maxes. There's a team of fucking this. There's a team of that. I was waiting for a team of Jordans.
Yeah, well, because that is a... I think that's a very British one.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go there. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, no one wants to go to fucking England. I get you, man.
Yes. But we'll see. That might be for later.
Okay.
It depends what time we finish here. No, I'm not doing that. I'll do it. I'll be doing it.
Here comes 3 a.m. and we're like, let's make a team of players that played like more than 20 games but less than 30 games. Stupid shit like that, which wouldn't be the weirdest thing we've looked up on your website, by the way.
No, that's true. It would be crazy, though. That's something we do. Mm. Superstar Lewis Dodd has been signed by South Sydney to be their halfback.
Yeah. Name all of the good halfbacks that have been signed by Australian rugby league clubs in the last 40 years.
Halfbacks, as in from other countries?
From England, I mean.
Oh, from England?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was George Williams.
Yep.
And he was good on, you know, selfies and stuff.
He wasn't as good as people made him out to be.
Yeah. I also don't think he was atrocious.
No, he wasn't atrocious. He wasn't atrocious.
He was better than Chad Townsend.
Yeah,
but he wasn't on the level of, say, DCE or Ben Hunt, like many people in England thought he was.
Oh, no, not even close.
He was more just a better version of Luke Brooks.
Can you think of... I don't think he was better than Luke Brooks even. I'd have taken Luke Brooks over him. Who would be the next British halfback that played over here before him? Like, it might be in, like, the early 90s, hey?
Sean Edwards?
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking.
And even then, he played second fiddle to Gary Freeman.
Yeah, and rightfully so. But I can't think of anyone between those two that's a halfback from England that played over here.
No, you're probably right.
Like we've had, there's not been even that many English backs. And for a reason.
We've had some, but they've not been great.
Yeah, every so often you'll get one, which is like, they're doing all right, but eventually they get found out.
Yeah. We got Irishman Luke Keary.
Don't start with that shit. Jackson Hastings.
Jackson Hastings. Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I've been trying to.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably there's not been many.
I know that Saints fans not that fussed that they're losing Dodd, and that's a bad sign, because when a Saints fan doesn't think the sun shines out of the ass of one of their players, that's like a red flag.
Massively.
Yeah. And the idea that you're going to fix your supposed halfback issues by signing an English halfback is just ridiculous. And the first thing I thought about is, like, where is Ilias going to end up? Because I'll tell you something. If Ilias ended up in a Panthers jersey, I'd be over the moon. You got this young halfback that's got a bunch of experience already. You get him in the right side and allow him to keep on developing. He will be a very good halfback. He's proven it. And Souths are giving up on him. And they're giving up on him because they need to make a splash. And we've talked about their issues are in their forwards. And yet here they are. They've brought a halfback. You know, it's crazy to me. It's a really bad move.
Yeah. Souths recruitment looks like it's panicking. Almost to the point where it kind of reminds me of most of the recruitment at the West Tigers, but without being able to attract people who are actually worth decent money.
Yeah.
Not saying that they should be paying them. I still have not figured out why they signed Whiten.
No, he, like, even in their team at the moment, he just is, like, he's okay,
but yeah.
It was not what they needed.
You go, you couldn't have found another center who could have done, you know, around the same sort of job for a fuck ton less money. You got plenty of them. Like, why not spend that money on, I don't know, a halfback, I guess, that isn't Lewis Dodd.
Like, they simply need forwards. Their forward pack is so outdated, they're getting smashed. Their defense is terrible. And, you know, it seems like they're just trying to go for home runs, and all they're hitting is strikeouts. So it's a bad sign for them. And, yeah, anytime you sign an English halfback to fix your issues, it's like, are you fucking serious?
I mean, if you have to buy an English halfback at the moment, why wouldn't you go after the current test halfback, which is Harry Smith? Plays for Wigan. If you're going to go after the halfback, do what Canberra did. You go after the test halfback. At least you know you're picking their best seven. Like, you're giving yourself the best opportunity. If you have to buy an English halfback, you may as well get the good one at the top of their list. But you know what I'm saying? Like, why go for one that's not the best?
I would never sign an English halfback, right? But, there's better halfbacks in Australia right now that there are jobs that they would take. The problem is the coach, and I'm guessing the CEO or the football manager, they know that they need to turn this around really quick or they're all going to lose their jobs. So they're trying to go for this big outlandish move rather than getting a good young halfback and giving them time to develop. And that's what they need to do, you know. Either that or get someone like a Ben Hunt.
Well, that would make more sense. But I think the question I've got more is this a Jason Demetrio signing or is this a South board signing?
That's a really good question. I would think it's – I mean, the fact that they haven't sacked him yet is interesting. Demetrio, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. It depends. I mean, like,
the media went pretty hard on saying that it was Mal Meninga was going to take over and that it was found out that Mal kind of wasn't that rock solid a thing for Mal. It's like, that was just a media thing. It's just, you know, they don't have to push for Shane Flanagan to get a job anymore, so they'll push for one of their own commentators. Oh, we'll get Mal back in there again. Fucking Mick Ennis next.
Channel 9 will be pushing all their people. By the way, I watched a Channel 9 game the other night. I can't remember what one it was.
Condolences.
It was Parramatta versus Manly.
Oh, that's
punishing. Let me tell you, it was – their presentation is so old-fashioned and their commentary is so fucking infuriating to listen to because the commentators, they just make it about them. Everything's about themselves. Like at one point they were talking about is it a full moon or not. They were showing pictures of the moon while the game was being played, like not in between a penalty kick or a kick to the sideline or something. The game is being played and it's a full screen of the moon.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the moon.
Yeah.
Do you know how many games the moon has seen?
And they're doing this thing where, like, you know, Andrew Johns and Brad Fittler are like, oh, it's a full moon. It's like, God. You can do this every time there's a full fucking moon, which they do.
You said full moon again. That's like saying bum.
It's so stupid and it's so outdated. It's like I very rarely watch a Channel 9 game, but I was watching that and I was like, wow, this is terrible.
I think aside from the completely banal comments that they come up with, the thing that gets me about the Channel 9 commentary is there's so many fucking commentators. So, oh, we've got one bloke on the side, we've got one bloke on the other side, we've got one bloke in the in goal, we've got one bloke over near the fucking touch post, we've got one bloke that's over there near the touch judge's ankle, we've got one bloke man in the chairs, one bloke's in the tunnel, one's in each room. The fuck, there's more commentators than there are players on the field. None of you give us any intelligent content.
Mm. Early in the game, Lane come off with a head knock, Parramatta second roller. And he come back on, he passed his HIA and come back on the field for only a few minutes before half time. And one of the sideline people interviewed him as he's going off and said, oh, you know, good half. And he had to say, I hardly played in it. You know, it's like, what were you watching? How did you miss that this guy was hardly on the field in the first half?
They were watching the moon, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. It's just really bad.
Oh, fuck. They're dreadful. I avoid Channel 9 as much as possible to the point where I even stopped watching State of Origin just to ensure I didn't have to watch them three extra times every year.
Well, like normally that's when I say it. I see their presentation during State of Origin and the Grand Final. And so it shocks me when I do eventually see it and you're like, it not only doesn't improve, it gets worse. And it's surprising. And it's all the same people. Like they never bring in anyone new. It's kind of weird. But yeah, their presentation is just so dated. It's pretty crazy.
Dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
What else went on? Oh, there was some. It's been a round of absolute fucking hidings this week. Anzac Day, the actual Anzac Day, not the three other Anzac Days that followed it. Good question we got actually asked on Twitter was, do you think we really need to have the whole Anzac ceremony in the last post 8 times during the week?
No. If you're going to do, like, I think you and me agree that there should be no football on Anzac Day, yeah?
I prefer that. I wouldn't mind if the NRL had an event commemorating Anzac Day that was televised, but no games are actually being played. So you get all the players to turn up, all officials. Go to the Sydney Football Stadium and do it if you want to, or go to some central venue somewhere, right? But do something like that. Or send half the teams to New Zealand, the other half here, and they can do a commemorative thing each way.
I'd hate that, hey. I'd hate that.
I don't know, but if they want to do something that's televised, then do that. And, you know, let's talk about some of the players in the past who went to war and those who lost their lives and stuff like that. Those are the people we should be remembering on this day. That's what it's for. Not just rugby league players went to war, obviously, but I'm just saying, you know, that's your tie. And we had a lot of rugby league players that went to war.
Mm-hmm.
We can commemorate those guys among with all the other men and women who went to war and died for this country. That's what should be happening. I don't like Anzac themed jumpers with sponsors all over them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the last post being played over and over and over again, because it weakens the significance of it, which I also very, very much don't like. If you really, really, really must have a game of football played on Anzac Day, then make it the Anzac Test. I don't know why we stopped doing that. But if that's what you want to do and you really want to have a game on, put that game on. Don't put club games on. And that way we can have one game on the day, Australia versus New Zealand, play the anthems, do all of that stuff, make it a big deal, play a test match. That's brilliant. And you just have that as a standalone weekend, right? And then the week after, we go back to playing club footy.
I'd just be happy for them not to play games. I hate the commercialization of it all, where, you know, instead of it being about Anzac Day, it's about the football game that's on Anzac Day. I hate it. I agree with you that I think the jerseys are tacky. I would never buy one personally.
And I never have. They're atrocious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know they donate some money to the charities and stuff like that, which is all fine, but I'd just rather that they didn't.
Well, just if they really want to donate money, you know?
Yeah.
Just give if it's cash. That important to the NRL, donate $1 million to the RSL.
Which I was to donate John Bateman to the RSL.
But don't do it because you're getting a cut. You know, don't say, oh, here's your cut of what we sold. Just donate the money.
Right. And that's what is happening.
Mm.
It's a horrible thing. It happens every year. I don't know. It does bug me.
Yeah.
It does bug me. Especially being a historian, I've done a lot of work looking at the, you know, a lot of the rugby league men who did go to war and read about the experiences they went through and some of the shit they had to deal with. And then you fast forward to now and it's like, let's put army print on a jumper with a forklift sponsor all over it.
Yeah, exactly.
Eh.
You know, oh, it's Anzac Day. You want to go to the footy? Fuck off.
Well, why aren't we hearing any stories about soldiers who played rugby league, didn't have to play for the Australian Test team? They could have played for, you know, Burrumbuddingha. I don't care. But tell us their story about what they, you know, when they went to war, what they did.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of them. Why aren't we doing that? We did it 1 year. Terry Williams, a mate of mine, was the man running the NRL Museum, which no longer seems to be functioning for whatever reason. That's another story for another day, apparently. Mm-hmm. But he did a headgear to helmets thing. And it was looking at all of these men who went to war. And he went through a bunch of prominent Australian Rugby League players who served in World War One. And 1 year, a full, it might have been a 90-minute or 1 hour, maybe 90 minutes, piece got shown on Fox Sports on Anzac Day. It was great. He had heaps of historians on there to come on and talk about, you know, different rugby league players from different parts of the country and, you know, talk about their stories and stuff like that. Brilliant. Brilliant. We did it once and that was it.
Yeah.
What happened to Lest We Forget?
Mm. Yeah, it's just, I just don't like it. I don't like any of it.
It's all turned into, as you said, like commercial wank.
Just, yeah, it's commercialization. And I just think a day like Anzac Day, I wouldn't have that happening for it. I think Anzac Day is Anzac Day. It's not a day when it's a public holiday with a football game. That's not what Anzac Day is about.
That's right. Problem is they've been playing games on there since 1927, so they're going to, well, it's history now.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, if it's history, then play in a jumper from the period. Right, but not a military-themed one or whatever you're doing at the moment. Just play in your retro jumper from 1914 if you had one.
Remember that year the West Tigers did one and it was of...
Oh, that was last year.
Yeah, it was that last year, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, they got the stock image from America.
American soldier. Jeez.
That was when Justin Potato... his tenure at the Tigers was sort of starting on, it was getting on a slippery slope, and that exacerbated things a little bit.
Mm.
Good times.
Yeah. Speaking of the West Tigers, because we haven't spoken about them for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
There's a report saying that the NRL wants to audit them.
Yeah, I don't know what this is about, but there's yeah, the most feared man in rugby league journalism, Phil Rothfield.
Ooh.
He's obviously been having a chat to a hat and a spud.
I tell you what, if you're a jug of beer, he's terrifying.
Oh, yeah. And he likes potatoes. Don't they make vodka out of potato peels or something?
They do, yeah.
Yeah, so we've made that link. The NRL is now looking at undertaking an extensive audit on all aspects of the West Tigers administration, including its recent dealings.
Now, it's funny that they say their recent dealings, right? Because obviously their previous dealings were a fucking disaster for the club. Absolute disaster. Their recent dealings have been to use salary cap space to buy Taruva for next year. To buy Jerome Luai for next year. They got rid of your mate. What was his name? Not Luciano.
Nofaluma.
They got rid of him. And that's
he's tearing it up in Salford now, apparently.
He is. He's even the when English people like start getting in contact with you and say, holy shit, this guy's really bad defensively on the wing. You know he's defensively deficient on the wing. So, yeah, like that's their recent dealings. Like they haven't even been there for very long. So what the hell would the NRL be interested in their recent dealings for as opposed to their previous dealings? Like their previous administration, like aren't they the ones that broke the salary cap and tried to tell the salary cap auditor that, no, we actually didn't break the cap, and then salary cap auditor's like, dude, we make the rules. We're telling you, you broke the rules. Like, that's the previous administration.
There you go. But they're not rules. They're just guidelines.
that was their argument. It sounds silly, but that was their argument.
The thing is, this has come, I think, just a few days after the Tigers announced that Shane Richardson has gone from being the interim CEO to they've signed him on a multi-year deal being the CEO of the club.
Yeah, I believe it's for 5 years.
Yeah, and brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Brilliant idea. You know what's happened twice this year that hasn't happened for as long as I can fucking remember of this club's history?
What?
Back-to-back sellouts at Campbelltown.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
That's phenomenal.
Mm. Even this game that they've played against the Broncos, and they got smacked, right?
Yeah.
And everyone going in knew they were going to get smacked, and they still sold it out.
And they were still, even at the very end when they scored a try, you could hear the cheer of Tigers going up.
Yeah, they went off.
Yeah, they stayed there to the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken a few months to weed out all of the shit and all of the people doing everything wrong and killing the club. A few months having a proper man running the club to turn this thing around, full 180 turnaround. And it's get people keen and passionate about him again.
Yeah, look, it's almost as though having an administration at the club that doesn't just solely focus on a 1960s oval in Leichhardt and ignores the whole Campbelltown region. It's almost as though when you've got an administration in there that accepts that Campbelltown is a giant part of the club, that the people at Campbelltown will respond to that.
It's been long, long, long overdue.
Yeah.
My God.
And the facilities difference is just night and day. I'm not even saying that Campbelltown Stadium is like this great stadium. It's pretty bare bones for what you need for an NRL game. But compared to Leichhardt Oval, there is literally a 70-year difference between the two.
Yeah. Basically, that is it. It's crazy. And look, I know I've said it tons of times before, and I'm sure it'd still stand today. If the Tigers would commit to playing more and more games at Campbelltown, they would probably get some sort of funding to upgrade it and make it bigger and better. Sure, you're mm-hmm. not going to make it some big phenomenal thing like, the Parramatta's home ground. That's not going to happen. But at least you can get some of the stands upgraded. You can probably build another one somewhere. The facilities can get improved. You could probably put a better training center out there. Maybe move out of Concord as well. Put everything out there. I know people say, people don't want to live out of Campbelltown. Going, we've got cars.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, too,
like, whatever the fuck you want, you can just drive there and train and drive home.
Yeah, Clint Gutherson lives in the Manly area and he plays for Parramatta. Like, you just get to work, don't you? But
well, that's all right.
The other one is the St. George players that drive down to Wollongong for training.
Like, yeah.
It just is what it is, you know? And that stadium at Campbelltown, I mean, there seems to be a real scope there that you could build upon that stadium. As long as you didn't turn it into a patchwork quilt of different sorts of stands, you could build upon that stadium with a really good long-term plan bit by bit. And end up with a pretty sizable stadium. Like, it's got that capacity there to do that. So, it's the future of that club. It just flat out is the future of that club.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Magpies League Club across the road. You've got train station right next door.
Right there. There's parking.
Yeah.
You know?
It's one of the few grounds in Sydney that has a train station that goddamn close to it.
Mm.
Like, why wouldn't you be maximizing that and turn it into something useful? You can ship them in and they can all just get on the train and go home. They can get pissed to their eyeballs and take the train home.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. It's a fucking no-brainer. Good to see Sir Lord Superstar Shane Richardson taking on the role of running the West Tigers and hopefully moving them to bigger and better things. I welcome my overlord. And may your reign be brutal and, I mean, pleasant for us Tigers fans anyway.
Yeah, we'll see how he goes.
And audit everything. Audit the fucking lot of it. Because well, Richo won't be a problem. Richo won't be in any problems. It'll be the fucking hat and the spud that'll be in trouble.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it reminds me of, remember when the Cronulla Sharks had to get a new CEO and he came into the club and had a look at how everything was going and immediately informed the NRL that there was an issue with the salary cap. And the NRL went in and found all of the salary cap rorting that the Cronulla Sharks were doing. You know, if there's a problem with your organisation and you're a new administrator that's just got there, by all means, please come in and help me find any issues there are so I can get on with the job, you know? Mm. Nobody wants to end up saddled with an issue that was left behind by a previous poor administration. So, yeah, I doubt that the current administration of the West Tigers would have any problems with an audit. And, yeah, so it's a bit of a non-story, really.
Absolutely. You know what? If you're going to do an audit and it might go bad, do it now when we've only just started the rebuild, because it'll just be part of the bloody story. We'll just keep moving forwards.
Yeah, like, you know, if they take all your season points away for this year, it's like, well, that was how many are you going to score anyway, you know? Get it over.
Yeah, kind of where we thought we might have been anyway.
Yeah. It's like only going to be like 6 or 8 points less than they're going to get anyway, so might as well do it now.
Just, yeah, I think that's nothing but just another beat up, because yeah. – There's no leaks coming out of the Tigers now. That was the crazy thing about the signing of Taruva. No one fucking knew about it.
Yeah, until it happened. There's been a few of them like that too, where – and it's not just those sort of player signing things. It's like all of the other shit. It's funny how a couple of people left the club, and we won't name names, but a couple of people left the club, and the news stopped filtering out of that club immediately.
Yeah, just shut up shop completely.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's amazing, because that's what happens when you get people out who think that they're famous and that they need to constantly be on TV and radio because they like being famous in their head. Well, you actually get somebody who actually wants to just run the fucking show and do the job.
Yeah, do the job. Yeah, you and me have talked about people that are – some of them are in and around the game, and some of them aren't, who like to be the man about town.
Yeah.
And they like to be that guy who's like, hey, I know some stuff. Do you want to hear some stuff? Because I know some stuff. Just letting you know, I know some stuff.
Yeah. I know and people.
Yeah, yeah. I know what's going on. Hey, I know what's really going on. Just let me tell you. And there are people like that in rugby league, and they stand out and – you know, generally they're full of bullshit.
Summed up pretty well.
Mm.
I mean, I can't find holes in that.
Yes.
Succinct.
Yeah. I find it really weird that why someone would want to be that person. Like, that it's image. It's an image thing.
It's an image thing, but they also think it makes them important or special or famous or something.
Mm.
And yeah, I don't know. Not really.
I'd be more inclined to be like, I'm not fucking telling you. So I said, hey, I heard you had some inside info. It's like, shut up. Go away.
Yeah, I've got inside info. Mm. I've got all the inside info.
Insider. That's always a funny one.
The inside is always good. What's happened here? There's not much else going on. There was, as I said, there was two big hidings on Anzac Day. Roosters flogged the Dragons.
Yeah.
And Shane Flanagan's takeaway from that match was that he's playing Cronulla next week.
Yeah, he has a grudge against the Cronulla Sharks. He's like, I put the quotes on my website. Let me find the quotes, all right? Because I wrote about it as soon as I read it, because they were like, I saw a report that was about like his reaction to them. Let me find it.
The key takeaway for me was every time you'd watch the press conferences after the match, you want to know what the coach was thinking, what he sees as the issues, and what he's going to be focusing on moving forward. And Flanagan was, he thought that was fine because he's already looking forward to next week.
Yeah. So this is what was reported by News Limited. Okay. These are direct quotes from Shane Flanagan after that flogging where they had 60 points put on them, right? Yep. They asked him about the Cronulla Sharks game coming up. And he said that's been marked on his calendar for quite a while, which is fair enough. You know, he used to coach there.
Yeah.
And then they asked him if it was going to be an emotional occasion for him, right? So he said, this is a quote, I won a comp there. I don't think they've won one since, have they? It's not about me. I don't care about me, and I don't want it to be about me. I want it to be about the team and the club, right? And then he went on to say, that was ages ago. I've moved on. I've coached at Manly, worked at Fox, worked on radio. I've had a good life, right? So it sounds like he has a bit of a grudge against the Cronulla Sharks, okay?
Yeah.
Now, I pointed out in this article that he coached the Cronulla Sharks between 2010 and 2018, that in 2014, he was banned for 6 months by the National Rugby League for his role in the Asada scandal, in which the Cronulla Sharks were involved in an illegal supplementation program, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 2017, the new Cronulla Sharks CEO, and we just talked about this just now, his name was Barry Russell. He took control of the club and he had a look at the books and he showed a lot of integrity. He went straight to the NRL and said, we have a problem. Because it turned out that the Cronulla Sharks' previous administration had set up a company specifically to get third-party sponsorships for players, which is completely illegal under the NRL salary cap. While the NRL was looking at the books of the Sharks, because the Sharks said, look at everything, please. Come in, look at everything. We've got nothing to hide as this new administration, but we know something's been going on here. As they were looking into this, they found that during Shane Flanagan's ban, he had been emailing the coach at the time and the football administration and basically not doing the job that he normally would have been doing if he was the coach, but being involved with the club and making decisions, which was totally against his ban. So when they found that, they banned him for life. And of course, we've talked about how that ban was overturned because the NRL was gutless about it. But for Shane Flanagan to have a hang up against the Cronulla Sharks, when you think of the devastating period of time that that club went through during his reign, and he was attributed to a lot of that stuff directly, he has nothing to fucking complain about. You know, that was the club couldn't get a sponsor for a long time because of the shit it went through. They went from being one of the most beloved clubs in the game to being one of the most hated.
Mm.
Shane Flanagan had a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he can bang on about, well, they've only won one comp and it was when I was there and they haven't won anything since. Yeah, but what has he done? You know, since that happened, he got a life ban as a coach.
The first.
Yeah. So he shouldn't shut his mouth.
I think the one thing also that says to me is that even after all that time has passed, he still has no remorse.
None.
Not even an inkling.
No.
Like, he's filthy on the club.
Yeah.
He doesn't even accept the fact that he did something wrong.
And do you remember when it first came out what was going on? And the club was like, we got to sack this guy immediately. And the players all stood up for him. Now, interpersonal relationships, cloud issues.
Yes.
And the players liked him. But the right thing to do for the club was to have sacked him immediately. And unfortunately, the club didn't do that because players were really pushing and there was a lot of pressure in the media. The media got behind Flanagan for some reason, which I didn't understand at the time.
And I think it was mostly because he would talk to Rothfield because Rothfield's a Sharks fan. I think the other problem the Sharks had, probably wasn't mentioned at the time, was given they were under investigation, if they had sacked him and a bunch of players had have left, how hard it would have been to try and attract players to the club that would have made them competitive. I think that might have been in the back of their mind. Like, let's try and wade through this shit first and then just start, just let contracts run their course and just replace them as they do, which is kind of what they did.
I also wonder if there was an element where the Sharks were advised that if they terminated people at the club, those people would no longer be obligated to be involved in any sort of investigation that was happening. And we've seen that happen. There was actually a, and I don't want to name names or the club, right? Because it's all very murky. But there was a club north of the New South Wales border that there was a potential salary cap issue. And a person that was very high up in that club immediately left. And because of that, they weren't obligated to talk to anybody about anything that was going on.
That's right, yeah.
So there could have been an issue in that the Sharks were kind of prompted to keep people on board for those reasons. But, yeah, he has no reason to have a gripe with the Sharks. The Sharks are still rebuilding their shattered reputation after the Shane Flanagan era. And he can point to his premiership all he likes because a lot of people in the game point to that premiership as well for different reasons.
Yeah. I think the other problem they would have had too is if they had to start a second players, what stories or what exaggerations those players might have made about all these allegations that are against them in the media then. So it was very much damage control they were in. I mean, let's just try and steady the ship and ride it out, which was, it's an understandable reaction to it. But yeah, there's, we saw once John Morris took over as coach and just after Gallen had left, how they just started making a lot of changes to lots of things. How they operated commercially. They had those big units there that they got sales from that, which shored up their finances for the first time in their history. They started changing who they recruited, the playing style. They started being, instead of being this boring, defense-oriented type grinding style of football, they started being entertaining, attacking side.
Yep.
I got one of the most, favorite sort of players for a lot of people to watch at the time was Nicho Hynes when he was at the Storm.
Yep.
Signed him massively. That was a huge coup. And just started building a really good squad and then got another new coach in there. And they've done a lot of great things with the club since in a short time, given the drama they had to overcome. There's no doubt about it. As we found when you talk about the Melbourne Storm, a lot of people still think of the cheating that they did over a decade ago.
Well, it makes you think, how long do the scars take to heal?
They take forever.
Yeah. I think about the Brisbane Broncos and people's thoughts on them after the Super League war, that they were an integral part of being, they were kind of ground zero for that in some ways. I would suggest that it is only in the last probably 5 or 6 years where those scars have maybe healed finally.
I wonder if that's largely due to the fact that they just got a wooden spoon and people went, finally, you've come and you've suffered.
It could be. There's definitely an element of the people being there at the time, fully everyone moving on. So, it's a completely different player squad, for instance, and different coaches and different administrators and stuff like that. So there's an element of that. But I feel like it really has only been the last few years where people look at the Brisbane Broncos as being, a good, exciting young team that you like watching rather than that fucking team that started Super League. Yeah. And that's a long time that's been.
That's all right. It's those scars do last a long, long time. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. There was a lot for Flanagan to talk about in this match. And the first thing he should have said when he was asked, and he got the Sharks next week, he's gone, mate, I've got 7 days to get this side back being competitive, because what happened tonight was atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care who we're playing next week. If we keep defending like that, you know, why would it matter who we're playing next week?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'd argue that the Sharks are at least in a similarly matched attacking side to the Roosters.
Yeah, they could put on a big score for sure. I mean, they do it against a lot of teams that you don't expect to be in the finals race. They do it a lot. So, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. But I just can't believe, as you say, there's no remorse there. He has a completely different outlook on what happened compared to everyone else.
And he's just given the Sharks even motivation too. So,
yeah, yeah.
That's always a dumb thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, the Roosters put 60 on the Dragons. Storm put 50 on the Rabbitohs. God, South looked woeful.
Yeah.
Manly belted Parramatta 32-18.
That was a bad sign for Parramatta.
They just seem to get more and more boring to watch.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And, like, they keep making changes, a lot of changes. Sivo was, I mean, it's weird. He scored 3 tries. When you get the ball in his hands and there's a half chance, he'll make it work.
Yeah.
But he doesn't look good in terms of his movement when he has to move laterally or turn around. And he got sent off at the end for coming down with the forearm, which wasn't needed. And it's weird to see how quickly Parramatta fans have turned from, like, cheering his name to just wanting him gone.
Yeah. I don't know what they do. It's, I don't know. Every year their attack gets less and less diverse.
Mm.
They just go back to doing more and more of the same stuff all the time, and teams are finding it easier and easier to defend against.
Well, and it's to the point where you sort of think Moses is going to come in to this team when he's back from injury. He's going to take a couple of weeks to get back into the swing of things, but he can't save this, you know? And it actually, in a weird way, makes me think of Moses as a different sort of player. Like, he really... Once he left this team, they fell to bits. Absolutely fell apart.
Yeah. Jeez. If you're Moses, do you just, when your injury's almost healed, do you go, oh, I'll tell you what, still a bit sore. I have another week off. Why would you come back into this side? It's a mess.
He's not Madison. He likes playing footy.
Oh, that's true. yeah. Anything else been going on? There's been no Formula One, so we can't go there. We have to stick with the rugby league.
Yeah. No. It's you know, our last episode wasn't that long ago. It was just, and I just watched that game, and I was like, I need to talk about the 6-again rule. And then I saw you post, and I was like, oh, Andrew must be free, because I saw you put up another team. Do you want to give us a team? Give us a team.
Team? Well, yeah. So what you did see me posting was me just shit-talking you about something you posted.
What was that? Oh, yeah, because I started posting during the Panthers game. I started taking close-up pictures of some of my figures and putting them on Twitter. And just, you know, saying, oh, this is how you feel when this is happening, this is how you feel when this is happening. Yeah, and then Andrew started taking a piss of my high-end collectibles.
No, it was a very lovely candelabra that you had today. It was lovely.
How dare you? Anyway, give us one of your teams. I want to hear what your latest team. A team. Have you got a team that you haven't posted yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I put them all up.
Okay.
But I'll try and find some of the good ones. There was the team of Steve's. Where's that? That one was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Let me find the list. I sent a long list to you. Where are they? Steve's. Here we go. This is fullback through to lock. Turner, Morris, Renoff, Rogers, Geerin, Carter, Mortimer, Roach, Walters, Price, Folks, Kearney, Menzies, and on the bench, Ella, Edge, Simpson, and Georgalis.
Yeah, it's hard to beat that one.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I did do one today, which was the team of Brett.
Mm-hmm.
And the back line is fucking fast.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got Brett Stewart, Brett Morris, Brett Rodwell, Brett Mullins, Brett Dallas. I couldn't find a place to put Brett Howland in there.
Yeah, he was a good flyer, hey?
I could have put Brett Morris at centre, dropped Rodwell and put Howland on the other wing.
I would have Howland ahead of Dallas, hey?
Well, yeah, but I mean, Dallas is fast. I'm trying to put – I was thinking, should I make it the fastest back line possible or –
You could make the. I wonder if. I guess you could do the fastest rugby league team.
That's possible. Well, and this team then had the halves of Brett Kenny and Brett Camorley.
Yep.
In the forwards, Brett White, Brett Boyd, Brett Goldsmith, Brett Lamann, Brett Plowman, Brett Horsnell. And on the bench, Brett Finch, Brett Hodgson, Brett Seymour, and Brett Hetherington.
You got to get rid of Brett Finch, man.
Yeah. I know. who else was there? I think the Andrews team wasn't too bad.
I was surprised by you could make a team in Neville's.
Yeah.
That was kind of shocking.
Got a few Neville's in there. That one's up on the League Freak website.
Yeah. Yeah, Andrew was posting these teams and he posted a few of them. I think you'd done three of them when I messaged you and I said, hey, do you mind? Because I'd been starting to look at some of the teams I'd put together years and years ago, like Team of the 90s and stuff like that. And I was like, man, I should do some of these teams. And then a couple of days later, Andrew starts posting these teams. And so I messaged him and said, hey, do you mind if I post some of these on my website? And he's like, yeah, fucking go for it, you know. And all of a sudden, like, Andrew's posted about 15 of these teams and it was last night and I'm hammering my computer. I'm like hammering away and I'd stop and I'd be like, ooh, I've only got three to go and I'd have a look and there was five more. And I'd fucking smash away, have a look and there's another five more. And I was like, fuck, man.
17. I did 18, 19, 20.
Wow.
And through tonight, so I've done 23.
Jesus.
How many articles did you do?
I think I did, let me see, I'll tell you.
Yeah, you got a few more, buddy.
I think I did six or eight, let me have a look. I did, because counting the team where, because I gave Andrew a challenge, I said, do two rugby league teams, so 13 and 13, but their first names start with the letters of the alphabet. So it's an A player, a B player, a C player. And he did that. So we're counting that one too. So there's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, and 12. Because the first team I think he did were the team of marks.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, not going to lie, that was largely off the top of my head. So I know that I missed a few people on that one.
Okay.
But, the alphabet one.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you saying?
I was just going to say, it's funny when I was reading these teams and I could see the ones where you were like, you just did that one off the top of your head. Like, I could see the ones you'd really had to look for, but then I could see the ones, like, there was one where you had Brandy Alexander in there He used Steve Carter a couple of times, and players that I knew were just off the top of your head.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something where as soon as I start them, I go, right, I'll put in the ones I know, just bang, 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 and then just go through Rugby League Project and try and find players for the position.
Yeah.
And just go from there and sort of plug in the gaps. But, yeah, that alphabet one,
mm-hmm.
it started out, I was going fine with it. I got through the first half because the way it worked was the fullback on the first team, their first name starts with A, then the winger starts with B, blah, blah, blah. And then you go all the way through the lock's first name starts with the letter M, and then fullback for the next team starts with N, and the alphabet keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I had was when I got to the second center for the second team, because that's the letter Q.
Mm-hmm.
And the only player, because these were all players that had played in the NRL and its history going back to 1908.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only been one player in the NRL whose first name starts with Q, and they were definitely not a back.
No, it was Quentin Pongia.
That's the one.
Yeah.
So I sent you a message and said, is it okay for this one where if I just use their surname starting with Q? So I was still using a small field. And you went, no. We're not changing the rules, pal.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Like, there would be some people that would, because I think I said, nah, that's cheating. And there'd be some people that would be like, oh, this guy's a fucking Dominican. And I knew you would laugh as soon as I sent that.
That's exactly what I did. So I was like, okay, I got to find someone. But we did. We got two pretty reasonably decent sides out of it.
Actually,
didn't think I was going to get the second row starting with X. There was only one forward whose name started with X, and he's placed there. It's Xavier Willison at the Broncos. But I think he might be more of a middle forward than an edge one, but he's there. He's a forward nonetheless.
You know, in the Darren's team that you made, and there was a couple, like the player that stood out for me, and it's a strange one. Here's the thing. Who do you think is the player that you named in the Darren's team that stood out for me?
There was two of them. Center?
Yes, and?
Junie?
No, Fritz.
Oh, Fritz?
Yeah.
He was a big unit.
He was huge.
Yeah.
One of the first players I remember that was just like, kind of like Payne Haas is today, where you're just holy shit, he's a giant human being.
I need to see if I can find his height.
He'd be average height now compared to other NRL forwards.
I don't know. I reckon he would have been 6'5 at least.
Yeah, he was massive.
Have a look. Is there anything here? No. Bugger. Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised if he was, say, between 190 and 200 centimetres tall, if he wasn't 200 centimetres tall.
Wikipedia?
Nah.
That's surprising. Hang on, I've got Darren Fritz. Hang on, let me see. About Darren Fritz, rugby league player, played in the 90s, he's 55. Yeah, played for Western Suburbs at the end. Yeah, it doesn't have his height, does it?
No. Nah. But yeah, he was a big, big boy.
Yeah.
I called them the Dazzlers. You know, Darren.
Yeah.
So it was good. I had to put Darren Center in at hooker because, you know, dazzling teeth, that dazzling smile.
Yeah, he was the other one. He, like a handy player, a sub-rep player. But, like, if somebody had been injured at the right time, he probably would have got his chance, but it just didn't really happen.
Yeah, he was one of those players that was, like, you do get them occasionally now that can play in the forwards as well as a hooker.
Mm.
But he legit would play as a hard-running forward, but could also play as a hooker.
Yeah. He really is the heart and soul of the early West Tigers team for me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Him and Scandalis for me were the two blokes that were the heart and soul of that West Tigers team when it first started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were huge.
That That's why I like these teams, because it tosses up players that you haven't thought about for a long time that you remember. And, like, you see their name and you're like, oh, yeah, that fucking guy.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I wonder who else there was. I can't think of any other teams I had in there. I think I had some. Was it the Harrys I did today?
I haven't seen the Harrys team yet.
Oh, Harolds and Harrys.
I saw that you did in your James team.
Yeah.
You did James Dimmick.
Yeah, well, you know, Jim comes from James, so I did Jims and Jameses.
But is his name actually James or is it Jim?
Who cares?
That's playing fast and loose, I think.
Well, I didn't have you there to set the rules on that thing, so I was just going with whatever the hell I wanted to. No, he's okay. According to Wikipedia, his full name is James Dimmick.
Okay, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Yeah, I dare say there's probably quite a few in there that were actually just Jim. I need to have a look at that. Where's the James? There it is. Jim Sedaris, maybe? The Jameses and Jim side's not too bad.
Yeah.
Got a few test players in there. Got a few very versatile players as well. So it was pretty good.
I like the Chris team, although I've never met a Chris that's fucking I like at all. But Chris Walker was in there. The one I liked, though, was Chris McKibbitt. I was like, yeah.
I was actually struggling too for a halfback for a while. And then I got.
Oh, yeah.
I was going through going, I know that there's one that played test footy.
Mm.
And when you're just seeing this constant wall of names, it just everything goes to a blur.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just saw it as I was scrolling in and went, ah!
Any chance you can make a team with Chris McKibbitt in it is a good day, I reckon.
Absolutely. It makes up for having Chris McQueen on the bench. McKenna's on there. You'll see that the person who I initially had at halfback is at 17, and that was Chris Sandow.
Chris Sandow, yeah. And look, he was a good player. He was a good player. I liked Chris McKenna as a player, versatile because he could play center and back row if you needed him to. But like, I think he'd be really good in the current game where, just you need that size and the mobility because he had both of those things. He's a good attack and player. I think he'd be more suited to the game now than he was when he played.
Absolutely, he was a great player.
Mm, mm. And he had Choppy Close in there too. I love Choppy Close.
It was a pretty good back line. Chris Quinn, Chris Walker, Chris Johns, Chris Close, Chris Anderson, Chris Mortimer, Chris McKibbitt.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bloody good back line.
Is Chris Walsh Christian Walsh?
No, Chris Walsh is Chris Walsh, but Christian Welch.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a little bit to drink, Andrew.
Just a little bit?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Let's just tip another one down. Should be
fine. Let's have a look. I can't remember the Mark team. Did you do the Mark team a couple of days ago?
That was the first one, yeah.
Okay, the Mark team was pretty good. I was glad you had Mark McClendon in there. You had Guyer in there.
I had to have Guyer in there.
Mark McGaw's another pretty handy player. He's another one of those big dudes, hey?
When was the early 90s?
Hmm.
Whenever it came to a rep team being named, like for, especially the New South Wales Origin side, bam, he's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like you didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
He's just there.
And he played bloody great too.
Yeah. Actually played a bit of time on the wing as well at the start of his career, which is a bit crazy when you remember him. He was a decent sized bloke.
Yeah, he was giant. He could have very easily been a forward. Like easily. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. It was pretty good fun. Another guy did one team of Sean's.
Mm-hmm.
Saved me from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's there. So he's got Sean Foley, Sean Devine, Sean Berrigan, Sean Timmins, Sean Kenny Dow, Sean Edwards, and Sean Johnson. on about Miles Perry.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean Keating, Sean O'Brien, Sean Wallace, Sean Valentine, Sean Fensham, Sean Lane, Sean McNamara, Sean Mann, Sean Hoare, Sean Spence. And the killer for you is the coach of Sean McRae.
The Walrus.
Walrus?
Yeah. Although I do like Sean Hoare.
Yeah. Which is even better if you just take his first initial and just as Shaw.
Mm.
I'm trying to downplay it, make that PG.
Mm-hmm. Should make a team of redheads.
Redheads, Rangers.
Yeah. Soulless.
Oh. Well, I think Chris McKivitt had red hair.
Did he?
Yeah.
I think I've only seen black and white pictures of him.
Well, yeah, but I'm pretty sure I remember seeing or reading somewhere a description of him saying that he had red hair.
You must have read it, because when did colour photos come out?
Oh, I might have met him some stage.
You may have met him. Yeah, old enough, you old bastard.
He lived till 1947. I'm sure I saw him somewhere. you won a gold medal.
What, in rugby union?
Yep, in the 1998 Olympics.
There you go, see? There's some things I have in my brain which is like, it scares me. I know it scares you sometimes too.
Oh, yeah.
I informed Andrew the other night after we'd recorded about the scandal in the Special Olympics regarding Spanish basketball team in 2000. And and if you haven't looked, go and look it up. 2000 Spanish basketball team Paralympics. It doesn't even sound real. So I looked it up for him to read the news reports from it. It's crazy.
In tears. That's the thing you need to be listening to at 1 a.m, I tell you.
I knew I had to bring up the news things, though, because it sounds like a hearsay, it couldn't have been that bad sort of thing. So I knew I had to bring documentation, and I did. And it was as bad as it sounds.
Oh, that was crying. Oh, loved it.
Well, Andrew, I think it's been a good episode. I think we've done well here.
We've done a pretty solid effort here, absolutely.
Yeah.
I know I'm impressed.
I know you've got another 4.5 hours of putting together teams with different names.
Yeah.
Try and make a team of Xaviers. Good luck with that.
Good luck with that, asshole. You did ask me the worst possible question when I was doing this. It was, can you give me a team of your best team? I was like, oh, fuck off.
Oh, best team of all time, yeah. I knew when I said that, I was like, hey, that's one where he's like, I'll hear that team in about 6 years from now.
Yeah, it'll evolve.
Do you want to hear my best team that I put together? Most of it was put together years and years ago.
Sure, why not?
It's on my website. The best team of all time. Hang on, let me find it. I'd probably have to readjust this team now, but this is the team I had, and this may be like 12, 15 years ago I did this team, okay?
Yep.
Okay, fullback Clive Churchill.
Solid.
Winger, first winger, Brian Bevan. Centre, Reg Gasnier. Other centre, Dally Messenger. Other winger, Ken Irvine. What do you think of the back line?
It's hard to argue with any of it. I've got more of a soft spot for Harold Horder on the wing over Ken Irvine.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I just think if you put Harold Horder around the same time that Irvine played, he scores a lot more than 212 tries.
Okay.
Because that guy played 150 games and scored basically a try a game.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where you're at with these things. Like even me looking at it, I'm like, Brian Bevan, I don't know about that one, you know?
Yeah.
Especially with
wingers. Like, there was also Sec Blinkhorn and Sec Ainsley back from the post-World War I period. That was insane. And there's so many others that have come along. And then you get into the centres. You've got Dave Brown and Steve Rogers and Mal Meninga. You go, fuck.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I would... I would even put Greg Inglis in that class, even though he played a lot of fullback. It's just, I mean, who do you pick? That's the thing. I think, though, you pick Reg Gasnier and Dally Messenger, it's really hard to, like, that's pretty safe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, halves. I think that I've picked safe halves too. Wally Lewis and Andrew Johns.
Yeah. It's hard to say no to that. I'd probably go with Duncan Thompson at halfback, but I mean, that's just me. Obviously, Johns is probably, well, he would have been a better defender. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But Johns, Duncan was doing shit that no one had ever seen before.
Yeah, well ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Oh, my activity thing just went off. Oh, it's International Dance Day Challenge. Yeah, I'm really fucking interested about that watch. Okay. Front row.
Yep.
Very modern front row, this. Glenn Lazarus at one prop.
Yep.
Cameron Smith is the hooker. Shane Webke is the other prop. Arthur Beetson would have to be in there.
Yeah.
But who do you get rid of?
Webke.
You get rid of Webke?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't think he had the skill in attack that Beetson had, while Beetson still also had the defensive game and the ball running game.
That's true. But, like, I mean, I rate every forward or every prop, I mean. I rate every prop against Webke. Like, if, and I don't think I've seen a forward since Webke that reached his level. Just that consistency, like just super, super reliability. I put a heap into that, like consistency and reliability for a forward.
No, that's fine. And that's a very good measure to have against, because that's the thing too, is that you can't have absolute freakish players being the measuring stick. Like, you shouldn't be measuring 5'8" against Benji Marshall.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
You know, that's why you can't really be measuring props against Arthur Beetson. And you can't really be measuring halfbacks against Duncan Thompson for similar reasons. They were doing things completely differently to everybody else, and few people have been able to do the same shit that they've done since.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally get it.
And that's not downplaying Webke at all, because you're right. He was phenomenal, and probably to this day, probably still a little bit underrated as a prop in my view.
I think that it's probably because it's a similar thing to Cameron Smith in that, like, there's not going to be a giant highlights package.
No.
But the quality of performance across his entire career is just, like, I mean, his worst game was an 8, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And his best game, which he had plenty of them, were 10s, and they come at the absolute, in the biggest games, some of the biggest games I've ever seen. And he was, like, he was never far from being the best player on the field in every game he played. He's just incredible. Back row, Norm Proven, mm-hmm. Frank Burge, Johnny Roper.
Pretty hard to beat.
That's the thing, hey? It's like,
pretty hard to beat that.
I don't even, any changes I'd make to this side, I think maybe Brian Bevan would be the one that I'd consider. But man,
who are you replacing him with?
I don't even know. That's the thing. It's like, it's a bloody high bar.
Oh, absolutely it is. Like, the only person you could probably replace him with would be Albert Rosenfeld.
Yeah, he'd be another one that, like, he'd be in the mix.
Because what he did that was different to Bevan, Bevan scored a ton of tries and had an insanely long career.
Yeah.
But Rosenfeld scored a fuck ton of tries in a much shorter career. Set records that have never been touched. You know, most tries in a season. I think he's got, top 4 or 5 of those or something like that. Yeah. It's insane numbers. He started out with the Roosters in 1908 as a 5'8", and then went over to England. They moved him to the centres and then moved him to the wing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was remarkable, man. Served in World War One, survived, came back, and then continued playing.
Great, like that's just crazy.
Yeah.
Do you know whereabouts he served in World War One?
I don't have it on me, but it was mostly in. I think it was. Did he go to Flanders? I have to look. I don't think he went to France.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember now. It's been a while since I looked at his record on here. Because he served with the... Because he was in England at the time, he didn't serve with the Australian Army. He served with the British Army.
Yeah.
Yeah, he served in largely in Mesopotamia.
So he was in Iraq.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. What a, it's just great. Like the.
I'm sure he went to Flanders briefly as well.
Crazy experience for the young men and the women that were involved in the war effort. Like, because they didn't have a frame of reference for where they were going.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
He was also the last of the original 1908 owner on Kangaroos to pass away.
I didn't know he went back that far.
Yeah, he was in the first tour. That's how he got to England in the first place and ended up at Huddersfield, is they picked him up at the end of the season, at the end of the tour.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. That's cool. Modern day players, you look at that side, right, that I just did.
Mm-hmm.
Modern day players that are probably, I'm not saying they're in the side, but are probably edging towards talking about them when you talk about this, that who's in the race, and maybe they get, maybe they miss the cut, but they're in the conversations.
Yep.
I think Jason Taumalolo.
Yep.
And I think we've talked about that on the podcast in terms of, like, I have a feeling that in decades to come, people will be like, this guy chose to play for Tonga and he made them so good they ended up beating Australia. Like, I think stuff like that will really resonate over time. So him. And I think that the only other one I can think of right now is possibly Josh Adokar. I think I believe he's the best winger in the modern game that we've had. In terms of, and once again, there's a lot of consistency in there.
This is the thing, okay? And it's I was actually thinking that you might have been surprised by when I mentioned it. When you said Ken Irvine was in your team and I said I'd drop him for Harold Horder.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we put that into a more of a modern spin.
Yeah.
If Alex Johnson ends up scoring more tries than Ken Irvine.
Yeah.
Does he go on your team instead of Josh Adokar?
No.
Yeah.
And so
that's the rule you've got to also apply to Brian Bevan. Is he there just because of his records? Because, I mean, they're impressive records, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And it's a really good argument to make, and that's why Brian Bevan would probably be the one that would be the one in this team that it's stands out to me looking at it is under threat.
Yeah. I look at the thing is, okay, I'm not – criticizing any of the players here, but when it comes to, like, historically from 1895 till now, only one position has had a stat that you could measure the majority of their performance on, and that was wingers and try scored.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a cheap measure, it's a very, very strong one. But that's, I thought that was a good way of trying to point that out as to, you know, I think a lot of wingers in the past, their job solely was to score tries.
Yeah.
And they've evolved into being much, much different players now. And not, they haven't evolved to being the same thing either. You can have one winger that's like Brian Tuohy who doesn't score massive chunks of tries every year. He scores plenty, but his role isn't entirely just to score tries. He's there to, you know, plow up through the middle and make big meters and get the sets off to a big start. So he probably spends more time running into the middle of the field than most wingers do. But then you get someone like Alex Johnson, who plays more like a older school winger, who stays to his wing, and he scores a ton of tries using pace, step, all that sort of skill, agility. And he just knows how to score tries, which is another brilliant skill to have, but they're two very different beasts.
Yeah. And these are the conversations we normally don't record. This is cool. So I'm happy that people can hear it. I think that there's definitely, I call them professional try scorers, and it sounds silly, right? But that, like Alex Johnson is a professional try scorer. Give him a chance, he'll score. He just will. Right. And as you say, very, very different from like a Mike Acevo. Very different from him. And that's the thing. I'll tell you what I wrote about Brian Bevan. And keep in mind, I wrote this 15, 12 years ago, something like that. I can't tell you exactly when. I wrote, to look at him, you would never have thought he was up to running around the field, let alone playing top-class football, but looks are more than deceiving. Fast and with dazzling footwork, Bevan's evasive skills saw him score an amazing 796 tries in 703 games.
Yeah.
Playing his entire career in England, he managed to score an almost unthinkable 100 try-scoring hat-tricks during his career. While he didn't have a full test career for Australia, his try scoring achievements are second to none, and they are. He's a world record holder in terms of top level try scoring. And I mean, that's what happens when you score 796 tries. I would guess he is more in the professional try scoring area than maybe the all round area.
Yeah, and this is. I'll go into why I mentioned Harold Horter, because he did play in the post-World period and into the 20s, okay?
Yeah.
So we're just going to look at his games played and number of tries scored.
Mm-hmm.
In the Premiership, 136 games played, 152 tries scored.
That's crazy.
In the City Cup, which was a minor competition we had, played 39 games there, scored 43 tries. Tour matches for New South Wales, 21 games, 35 tries. Tour games for the Metropolis team, 2 games, 5 tries. Tour matches for Australia, 37 games, 48 tries. Test matches, where is that? 14 games, 12 tries. Games for New South Wales, 35 games, 65 tries.
Jesus.
In his rep career, like for Australian rep teams, but not the actual Australian national team, he had a total of 50 games all up and scored 85 tries. It's insanely staggering the number of tries that he punched out. And he had a 12-year, started in 1912, played one game for South in 1912. So basically started in 1913 and finished in 1924.
It's a little bit like Reg Gasny's career wasn't super long, but when you look at his achievements in it, it's like he has the achievements of somebody that like played for 16 to 18 years.
Yeah, you see, he had this rather short career back then. The Premiership season went for 14 games. That's just nuts. The amount of points and tries and whatnot he scored in such a short career. Played for the New South Wales state side, the Queensland state side. Went up there in 25. Played for Brisbane. Played for Sydney at rep level. Played for Metropolis, Sydney, a possibles versus probables game. Played for Australia from 1914 to 1924. Played the Bulimba Cup. Bunch of tests, the City Cup, all sorts of stuff, man. Premierships everywhere. phenomenal player. He won two titles with Norse.
Yeah, yeah.
Not too many people did that.
No.
And then went on to play. He played for South either side of his time at Norse. But, yeah, just phenomenal career. But he's just one of those people who has been forgotten over the course of time, largely because the records that he set got broken by someone else. That was Ken Irvine.
Yeah.
So Ken Irvine's now the guy. And that's why I was sort of wondering, if Alex Johnson breaks his record, does Irvine then start getting forgotten?
Look, it's possible. I think the thing about that try scoring record is that, you know, we play so many games now and we've had so many good try scorers since. And there's been so many guys that you've thought, oh, he's kind of on track. And then they all fall short. And it really shows how difficult it is to get that record. Like it's, there's not too many, like, cause that's a pure scoring record. And like you can look at the point scoring records and stuff like that. It's all modern day players. But he is like, you know, it's got to be one of the longest held records that we still have. Definitely the longest held scoring record in Australia anyway.
The longest scoring one is Dave Brown's points in a game.
Oh, yeah. But like, I mean like accumulation. Yeah, no one's beaten that. Someone beats that, something's gone wrong.
It is crazy, though, to think that it hasn't been beaten, given that the value of tries have gone up.
It's one of those records where it doesn't even make sense. It's like the 96 points one in a game, where it's like you can't even imagine what it's like. And when you get a glimpse when a team scores like 70 in a game and it's so one-sided and you kind of get like just a gentle hint of what it must have been like, but it's not what that was. That's like, you just can't even imagine it. You can't imagine what that's like.
And I mean, the crazy thing about that game too is I'm pretty sure it was something like 30-something nil at halftime.
Yeah. It went on a friggin' rampage and a half.
I'll find out now. It was it was worse than that. St. George led 23-6 at halftime.
Holy crap.
68-0 in the second half.
And that's the thing. It's like, can you, like, we've seen 68 points scored in a game and how it's just an obliteration. Imagine seeing that in one half. Like, you can't imagine that.
In modern days, the scoreline would have been up 110-6.
Fuck.
It's 19 tries that St. George scored.
I remember watching in the 2000 World Cup, Australia absolutely annihilate Russia.
Yes.
They scored 100 points. I think that was maybe 110-4 or 6.
That's it, 110-4.
Yeah, and that was just like, that was a non-opposition game.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, it can't have been like that in the Premiership.
It was crazy. Speaking of, someone actually sent us a tweet on our, Sam Revel.
Yep.
On Twitter sent us a picture of a game that was in the Melbourne Ingram Cup up in Queensland where a team won 130-0 on the weekend.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's West Wales Raiders territory right there.
That is. Except they did it week after week. Well, they had it done to them week after week after week.
Well, they let in 140 twice, I think.
There was something else I wanted to talk about with this team. What was it?
We're basically going over, you know, which players might get a mention in there later on. And you said Jason Tuomalolo. The other one I could think was Billy Slater. And I know it means usurping Clive Churchill.
Yeah.
But that's the realm that Slater is in.
I agree. And I think Greg Inglis and Darren Lockyer are also in that realm. I know you don't rate Darren Lockyer as highly as I do.
And it's not to say I don't rate him. Phenomenal player. There's, you can't deny that. So, yeah, it's Wally Lewis, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think even Darren Lockie would be like, dude, it's Wally Lewis, you know?
Yeah, he'd be like, if I'm number two to him, I'm fucking happy.
Actually, what Darren Lockie would say is, dude, it's Wally Lewis. Clough Churchill as the fullback, right?
Yep.
I think he's the best player of all time. And I've thought that for a very long time.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to top that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
it's a non-negotiable, that one.
Yeah, I feel like it is too. Everything I've read about him, it's like not just his achievements, but what people said about him.
Well, he was, I think a lot of historians have kind of sort of suggested that he was the first of the fullbacks to play like a second 5'8". That's where that whole concept began. And it didn't even take off after he started doing it. It took a while for it to happen. Same when Arthur Beetson started doing all these offloads and passes and stuff like that at prop. It just wasn't the done thing. And it took a while before other props started doing it. There was a lot of talk at the time that Steve Roach was the first player to come along that reminded players of Beetson at his best. You're going, that's 20 years after Beetson at his best.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think Blocker was great, but I don't think he was in that realm.
No. I think you'd have to have someone like Blocker's ability as a pure front rower, and then add Andrew Fifita's probably mobility and offloading ability.
Yeah, that's the thing. The best way to put it, and I know it's going to sound weak, is you're right. You take those two aspects, Steve Roach and Andrew Fifita, and then there's certain mechanics of the way Paul Gallen would sometimes hit a line. He would sometimes hit the line. Like if he wanted to pass the ball at the back, it was something that Beetson did really well. He'd go in and he'd turn as he hit the line so that the ball-carrying arm was not being wrapped up, so it was free to offload. And it meant that not only could he offload, but he could offload it without being impeded, so the pass would actually go where it was supposed to go. And it sounds easy enough to do, but very few players have been able to master that skill to a regular, to a consistent level and do it for the majority of their career. Gallen stopped doing it at a certain stage, and I don't know why. Maybe because Flanagan just wanted to keep playing boring football up the middle, I don't know. But it was the one thing that Gallen had in his game that was very, very strong, that teams could not shut down. And you've got to combine those three aspects to make Arthur Beetson. And that's why he's still like the bar.
Yeah.
He's still the ceiling. Like three players all played test football in different times, and none of them could all do in one package what he did.
Yeah.
This is phenomenal.
Yeah. And he had his career, like when you think about it, because it's kind of pretty much at an end when State of Origin rolls around. Like he's playing reserve grade for Parramatta when he gets called up for Queensland in that first game.
15 years after he made his debut in the New South Wales Rugby League.
Yeah. And he played across. You and me wouldn't consider them to be different eras in a pure sense, but I guess very different play styles that he played through, and he was good in all of them, you know.
He played as a teenager during the unlimited tackles period of the 50s and 60s. Then he played in the four tackle period, where, you know, you have to be able to throw the ball around pretty quickly if you're going to make any meters up ground. You only got three tackles and you're going to get your kick away.
Yeah.
Which is insane. And then the six tackle rule, where he just absolutely reveled in that. That was just just to him and nobody else.
Yeah.
It was insane. So, yeah, he was through all of that. Absolutely. It would have been great if he could have played in the 10-meter rule. Oh.
Yeah, imagine that. Like the way that, it would have been interesting to see the way he engaged the line, hey? Because it would have been different for him.
Yeah. You probably would have seen he would have ran a bit more like Andrew Fifita, but with less crossfield running. He would have ran the angled lines a lot more, but he wouldn't have done the. Yeah, sometimes when Fifita got the ball and there was nothing on, he'd start running sideways.
Yeah, yeah.
He wouldn't do that. He'd still be running forward at the line, trying to engage them somewhere. But, geez, he'd be unstoppable.
Yeah, yeah.
God, it would be great to see.
Cameron Smith, that's like another non-negotiable at this point, isn't it?
Yeah. That was going to be locked down for pretty much forever, I think.
Yeah, the thing with Smith that the way I describe it is that through league history, I think there's been an evolution of the hooker position, obviously. And when we got into the late 80s, early 90s, and you started getting those halfback skills out of dummy half through the likes of Walters and your mate Benny, and we saw a constant evolution through the 90s of hookers. Mm. And into the noughties and stuff, and then Cameron Smith comes along, and you could have made a really good argument as you went forward, like, oh no, this current guy's the best ever. This current guy's the best ever. We had, at the end of the 90s, this current guy's the best ever. Danny Badiris, you could have made a argument that at one point he was the best ever. Then Cameron Smith comes along, and then he plays for nearly 20 years, retires. And everybody since then, no one's ever said, oh, he's the best ever. It's always back to Cameron Smith. Yeah. And I think that says a lot.
It was his it's a word you don't hear used in rugby league much, game craft.
Mm-hmm.
He just owned the game.
Mm. Had a complete command of everything.
Yeah. Just saying, it was kind of like I suppose Peter Sterling at his peak, very similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just you in see, control, no panic.
You see glimpses of it in Cleary from time to time where you're like, ooh, that's it right there.
When games are getting close and something needs to happen,
mm.
It's a very Wally Lewis thing. Wally Lewis would do it with sheer soul, you know, skill and, mm-hmm. and just crazy ability mixed with strength. Mm-hmm. He had that. The others, Smith, Sterling, Cleary,
Johns,
they'll use guile and skill. Yeah. Smith though was so perfectly skilled in every aspect of play that it meant that he could just do you however the hell he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's close to the line, he might just send a crash ball to the lead runner. He might just send it out the back to a halfback. He might just go himself.
Mm-hmm.
Might put in a grubber. Or find a way to get a repeat set, keep the pressure on, because he wasn't always just thinking about the current play.
Mm.
If we're down by six and there's 6 minutes to go, then I'm going to do everything to make sure that we keep hold of the ball and keep putting pressure on until we make them break. And I'll be there the whole way through. And that's... It was the complete calmness of him. You never saw him panic. You never saw him stress. You didn't see him out there on the field yelling and screaming at his teammates, telling them what to do and stuff like that. Always in control.
Mm-hmm.
Just out of this world.
Oh, and a goal kicker.
Yeah.
Like, and those things matter, you know.
It's crazy. He didn't have a, like in the modern day, he didn't have an insanely high goal kicking percentage.
Mm.
But if you were to take out all the goals that were really important at the time they were kicked, mm-hmm. yeah, that shit's getting close to 90%.
Yeah. It's, I really value consistency. I really, really do. And that's what, I think that's one of the things that has made Penrith so well is the consistency in their forwards, especially. You never have to wonder if James Fisher-Harris is going to be there. You know, you never have to worry about if it's going to be like Moses Leota. Like, is Moses Leota going to have a bad game? No, you never have to worry about that. Never have to worry about, yo, is he going to have a bad game? You know, it's that consistency is amazing with players to me. And, like, that's – you can see – I think you can see a lot of that in the team that I selected, you know, because it's a big part of it, you know. Norm Proven, like, is there anybody that – was more consistent than him at just being an absolute out and out winner. Glenn Lazarus is the same. Like, what he did as a prop forward, like premierships for three different clubs as the leading prop forward, is insane.
Yeah. Unmatched.
Yeah, yeah. Glenn Lazarus is one of those ones too. There's not going to be a huge amount of highlight reels about him, but you know, for someone that big to have his mobility and just motor.
That's the thing. The motor on him was ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
The minutes he played. I think the only other one I can think of that was able to play the same sort of minutes to him for the majority of their career was Paul Cyrinan.
Yeah, he was another big dude that could do that, yeah.
You didn't get that too often.
Mm.
Yeah. That's been a very entertaining yak.
Yeah, this is the stuff we normally don't record.
Yeah. What are we telling people this stuff for?
I don't know. We'll just delete it. It's all right. I'll delete the last half hour.
I think that's only fair. I'm sure no one wants to listen to that.
No.
All right. Well, I guess we should wrap this one up.
Yeah, it's been a good ep.
It's been a bloody good episode, absolutely. Shame the Tigers didn't win, but, you know. They're winning hearts and minds. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Look, I know what it feels like, Andrew. Penrith didn't win by as much as I felt they probably could have. It's very disappointing.
That's fair.
Difficult. It's difficult.
It is. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Make sure you check us out on all the socials. Give us some comments, please. That'd be great. And, yeah, we'll catch you next time.